is anyone on the line?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, well, you can hear us, obviously. That's good. Let's go ahead and take roll. First off, I would just apologize for the delay. We had some technical difficulties, and we do apologize for the lapse of time. First off, is Mary Sisick on?
Yes, I'm here.
Great, thanks. Jim Adkins? Is Jim Adkins on?
Present.
Great, thanks. Peter Rasmussen?
Here.
Arlene Bennett?
Present, Mr. Chairman, and I have Ann Kuiper and Dave Fridley with me also of Martin Group.
Ann Kuiper and who?
Dave Fridley.
Okay, thanks. James Overcash?
I am, Commissioner.
Great, thanks. Talbot Wazorik?
I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Monica Barone?
Yes, here, Mr. Chairman.
Meredith Moore?
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Richard Helsper?
Present.
Are there other parties on the phone? Are there individuals on the phone that we haven't announced? Okay. This is the meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. It is Tuesday, January 16th, 2007, at a little after 3 o'clock. This is the time and place for the ad hoc commission meeting. We'll be dealing with two items today. The first is TC06-175. I would note that because all parties are on the telephone and because we have a court reporter, I would ask that every time you speak, you announce who you are. That would be very helpful. Thank you. TC06-175 is in the matter. This is Commissioner Dusty Johnson. I'm joined here in Pierre with Commissioners Gary Hansen and Steve Kolbeck. The first docket is in the matter of the petition of Sprint Communications Company, LP, for arbitration pursuant to the Telecom Act of 96 to resolve issues relating to an interconnection agreement with ITC Incorporated. Question for the Commission today is, shall the Commission grant ITC's motion to compel discovery? That motion was filed on January 9th. Can you all on the phone hear us fine here in Pierre?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great.
Yes.
With that, I think it would be, unless anybody has anything preliminary, we would turn to ITC to make oral arguments.
Chairman, this is James Prakash on behalf of ITC.
Okay, go ahead, please.
I'd offer first into evidence five exhibits that were attached to our motion, which were labeled A, B, C, D, and E, which are comprised of the discovery responses.
Okay, the exhibits have been offered. Does anyone have any objection?
On behalf of Sprint, does not.
Okay, does staff have any objection?
No objection.
Hearing no objection, those exhibits will still be entered. Thanks, Mr. Overcash. Go ahead, proceed.
Commissioner, again, this is James Overcash. For the record, there are three items contained in our motion to compel the request for verification, the request for admission number 3, and interrogatory number 7. In those three items, additional information has been provided by Sprint, and there's no longer a need for this commission to address these discovery requests are outlined in our motion to compel.
Mr. Overcash, could you please repeat those three areas? I picked up interrogatory number 7.
Request for admission number 3.
Okay.
And our first request that we had submitted was a request for a verification to make sure it reflected that they had provided a verification and additional information in regards to request for admission 3 and interrogatory number 7.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. This is James Overcash. First request I'd like to speak to.
Mr. Overcash, hold off. We're going to try to adjust the volume a little bit in here. You're a little soft, and I don't know that it's on your end. It's probably on ours. So if you could pause for a moment. Again, I apologize. And you're also cutting out. Is there anything you could do on your end?
I'm speaking right to the phone. There sounds like there's maybe a mobile phone or something on it. I'm not speaking.
If somebody is on a wireless phone, if you could try to get to a landline, we would appreciate that. You know, the nature of the conferencing system is sometimes when it picks up something, it moves to that phone as opposed to the person we really want to hear from. We're going to go ahead and turn up the volume. We may have to ask you to repeat yourself, Mr. Overcash, because you are cutting in and out a little bit. But let's go ahead and attempt to start again.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. This, again, for record, this is James Overcash. The first request I would like to address are document request number 2 and document request number 3. The supplemental information as well as the primary responses, Sprint provided copies of Sprint. Remaining issue for this commission to consider.
Mr. Overcash, I am sorry. We lost you for about 5 seconds there.
I'm sorry. It does sound there is a cellular phone that's coming over the top, but I could be mistaken.
Jim, this is Rich Elsper. I think that cellular phone just hung up.
Okay. Well, it sounds clear now, Rich.
It does sound much better. Again, my apologies. Let's go ahead and try it again.
Again, for the record, Mr. Chairman, this is James Overcash, and I talked with the first request. I'd like to speak to you about our request number, document request number 2 and 3. Those are requests that ask for contracts and contractual relationships regarding Sprint. Sprint had provided a copy of Sprint's South Dakota tariff, as well as their agreement identified their interconnection agreement with Quest and agreement with Prairie Wave. The remaining issue before this commission is to consider whether Sprint provide a copy of the agreement that exists between Sprint and Mediacom, or I'll refer to in the day as MCC. Sprint has objected to document requests 2 and 3 and has currently refused to provide an agreement really on two grounds. One, that information cannot be adequately protected by a protective order, and two, that any contractual relationships between Sprint and any third parties, including MCC, are not relevant to this proceeding. Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
Can you still hear me okay?
You know, I don't know. Did you pause for a while on your end?
No.
Then that's bad. That's a bad sign.
It's a bad sign. Here, I'll try to pick it back up from the top, and I apologize for the problems we're having.
Well, you were doing great until 10 or 15 seconds ago.
There you go. The first issue in terms of the Sprint objects to, or the basis of the objection, is a lack of an adequate protective order. Generally speaking, in terms of the production of confidential information, there is a process that's followed. That is, in effect, a discovery request is made by a party, in this case ITC. Sprint has identified or would identify responsive information that may be confidential. If Sprint wants that information protected by a protective order, they would request a protective order. Not unilaterally choose not to provide the information. Here, in this case, Sprint has not made such a motion, and additionally, there's an adequate protective order already in place. Protective order. The proper procedure would be to request the order, in our minds, provide that document and information that Sprint views as confidential to the commission and to council for an in-camera review and then a discussion, a decision, and maybe an argument on their request for an additional protective order. I would presume that the commission would hold some type of hearing to make the determination as to whether, first, the information is subject to protection, and then, two, whether what types of restrictions should be put in place in regards to that document and information. The use by Sprint of an objection to unilaterally stop ITC from reviewing information is erroneous, and Sprint must be ordered to produce the documents requested. The Commission's protective order previously entered in this proceeding.
Mr. Overcash.
Information alleged to be confidential. Additionally, Sprint's request to unilaterally delete information from agreements before those agreements are provided to ITC is improper. Sprint has no right to make this unilateral modification to these existing documents. Additionally, we believe that the information requested by Sprint is important to this proceeding, as well as arbitration process. That is why there is a protective order previously entered by the commission in this proceeding, because of the tight schedule that would not burdensome the necessary to review a new motion for protective order during this current time frame. currently we stand that Sprint is unilaterally withholding documents, has not even yet sought a revision in the current protective order from this commission. We believe that the current delay in providing this information based upon a protective order objection is improper and delays and compresses the time schedule already involved. We believe that the objection should be overruled. Sprint's second basis of objection is relevancy.
Mr. Overcash?
Yes, sir.
We lost you at relevancy. I am going to, you know, just... Normally we don't have these problems, but I might just try one other thing. Those of you that are not speaking, if you could mute your phone. I don't know why we have such a high level of sensitivity right now, but it seems as though we do. And we're working on some other possible solutions on our end as well, but I apologize for interrupting your flow, Mr. Overcash. We lost your relevancy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's music on. I assume that's not you being on hold.
No.
Oh, geez. Somebody put it on hold.
All right, it's gone. Somebody mistook hold for mute. Go ahead.
I still hear the music coming through.
I still hear music.
Oh, I actually think that's Richard losing his mind. No, I'm kidding. No, Mr. Helsper, I hear it as well. All right, we're gonna take a 5 minute break so that we can try to resolve some technical issues on our end. So if everybody could just pause, my apologies, but we were losing enough of Mr. Overcash. I don't think we can continue at this rate.
Okay.
Up here.
I don't hear the music. It's not from us. Steve was curious whether or not we're putting out a hole here and it might create.
No, not mute all, is it?
Yep, yeah.
The mute all in here and then they just hear them over there.
And
see if that
was something. And then we have to press the mute when.
Well, there's no mute all.
Okay, I'll see if that helps.
What other potential steps can we take?
That's the only one, because that one might be the sound system in here could have been trying to link a bit on. We're not sure.
Yeah.
There's volume, but they're hearing us now.
All right, we're going to go ahead and give it a shot. We think we have solved the problem. Another round of apologies to Mr. Overcash and everybody involved. And let's go ahead and pick it back up from where you left off.
Jim, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, this is James Overcash. What I was about to discuss was the relevancy objection that Sprint has made to our document request number 2 and number 3. As reflected in our filing, the relevancy standard in discovery is broad and provides that discovery is allowed for information and documents. There really is two prongs, one that are relevant to the subject matter involved in the pending proceeding, or reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. It should be recognized by the Commission that the information may not be admissible in a court of law, and admissibility of items that are requested in discovery is not a requirement for the information to be discoverable. Here, Sprint clearly raises the issue about the Sprint-MCC relationship in their arbitration petition. If you would review paragraph 23 of the Sprint petition, and it's in our filing, and I want to read you one sentence. It says, specifically in South Dakota, Sprint has entered into a business arrangement with MCC Telephony, Inc. to support its South Dakota affiliates, MCC Telephone of the Midwest, Inc., offering of local and long-distance voice services to the general public in the service territories of Interstate. Clearly here, Sprint is a party that has raised the relationship with the third-party MCC. It seems apparent and basic that when a contractual relationship is raised in the arbitration petition by Sprint, and thus the Sprint-MCC relationship is obviously directly connected to the consumers in South Dakota, that the contractual relationship is clearly relevant to this arbitration proceeding. A full understanding and evaluation of the relationship between Sprint and MCC is an integral, necessary, and substantial part of understanding whether Sprint may, under applicable law, require interconnection between Sprint and ITC for end-user customers of a carrier different than Sprint, in this case, MCC. Any argument that the agreement does not meet the broad standard of relevancy for discovery is erroneous and raises the obvious question of what's in these documents and what negative impact they may have on Sprint's claims. Attempt to shield these documents should not be allowed, and the Commission should grant our motion to compel in regards to these two document requests. Next, I'd like to address the Commission interrogatory number 14. That interrogatory requests Sprint to identify individuals that negotiated the business arrangement between Sprint and MCC. Sprint objected to interrogatory 14 on two grounds: one, that it was overly burdensome, and two, that it was irrelevant or not calculated to lead to admissible evidence. Sprint's response to the motion to compel did not address Sprint's unsupported, overly burdensome objection, and we believe this objection is demonstrated in our paper filing is erroneous. Sprint's second objection regarding relevancy is equally invalid. The Sprint-MCC relationship has been raised by Sprint. The relationship is relevant, and the discovery of the names of the individuals involved in the development of that relationship is relevant to this proceeding within the broad standards that are applicable to discovery. As a side note, it's interesting that in their response to our motion to compel, Sprint argues that there are discovery requests that the contract in effect speaks for itself. This may be true, and frankly, the contract may contain valuable information, but we have not seen this contract because Sprint has refused to provide it. In regards to interrogatory number 14, we would request that Sprint be ordered to provide the information that's requested. Our request interrogatory number 15, we request that Sprint provide the names of individuals from MCC that negotiated the business relationship between MCC and Sprint. Sprint objected to interrogatory 15 as follows, and they quote, Sprint objects to this request to the extent that it asks Sprint to respond to discovery on behalf of MCC. MCC is not a corporate affiliate of Sprint, and Sprint has no authority to obtain discovery from MCC. Sprint further objects to this request as being irrelevant and not calculated to lead to admissible evidence. We believe Sprint's objections are wholly without basis. Although ITC understand that Sprint has no authority to obtain any information from MCC, or for that matter, direct MCC to take any action, all that is requested is Sprint's knowledge regarding the identity of these individuals. Sprint's unexplained objection regards to relevancy should also be ignored by the Commission, and the details is on our paper filing. We believe that the names of the individuals that Sprint has knowledge of that were involved from MCC is relevant to the applicable proceeding and within the bounds of discovery, and we would ask the Commission grant our motion in regards to interrogatory number 15. In regards to interrogatories number 16, 17, and 18, all these interrogatories are related. In this proceeding, Sprint has asserted that it is a telecommunications carrier under the 1996 Telecommunications Act. An entity must be a common carrier in order to also be, in effect, a telecommunications carrier. One of the major elements of this analysis is determining whether the entity holds itself out indiscriminately to serve all. For example, these three sets of interrogatories, interrogatory number 16, request that Sprint identify all agreements between Sprint and any party that provide for the same terms, conditions, and pricings of the Sprint-MCC agreement. In effect, the type of information that's being looked for is, are we holding things out indiscriminately? Is everyone being served? Sprint objects to interrogatory number 16 and 17, and they did not answer 18 because it was a follow-on to 17 on three bases. One, that it is trade secret and confidential. They also provide some unexplained general objections, and they state the contracts with third parties are irrelevant. We addressed the unexplained general objections in our filing. Regarding the trade secret claim made by Sprint, the discussion I previously provided regarding the applicability of protective orders in discovery is equally applicable here, and I will not consume your time by restating that discussion now. Regarding relevancy, the information is clearly relevant. Sprint is attempting to maintain that it is holding itself out as a telecommunications / common carrier when it acts under its individually negotiated agreement in providing service to MCC telephony. However, this self-certification is not enough. Sprint must demonstrate that Sprint is a telecommunications carrier in this situation. Consequently, the information regarding Sprint's other carrier relationships may likely be relevant to how individually negotiated agreements are used by Sprint. Whether Sprint's conduct qualifies as a common carrier is relevant to this proceeding, as it allows this commission to test whether there is a non-discriminatory holding out of any offering being made by Sprint. Currently, ITC does not believe Sprint is a common carrier, and thus Sprint is not entitled to create a potentially confusing situation by interconnecting to ITC for a third party, in this case MCC's end user. ITC believes that MCC must seek interconnection directly with ITC for these customers. Sprint cannot be allowed to make self-certification claims and then not provide the information documents necessary to investigate these claims. The ITC requests that Sprint be ordered under our motion to compel to respond to interrogatories 16, 17, and 18 and to provide the appropriate documentation. My next interrogatory I'd like to address is number 20. Interrogatory number 20 requests a diagram that shows the Sprint MCC network. Sprint has provided conceptual diagrams, but no diagrams of the actual network. Sprint has now stated in the response to the motion to compel that Sprint has no diagrams that show Sprint's and MCC's network in South Dakota. ITC now agrees that if no diagram exists, no diagram may be produced. We agree that Sprint cannot produce what they do not have in their possession. And based upon this representation by Sprint that no information and diagrams exist that are responsive to this request, the motion to compel is withdrawn regarding this request. Likewise, and somewhat related to that, interrogatory 20 is document request number 5. Document request number 5, ITC has requested specific and detailed documents regarding the location of network resources, including, for example, transportation resources. Sprint has now stated in their response to the motion to compel that they do not have this information. Although it is unknown how Sprint will be able to support MCC's network without this information, Sprint cannot produce again what they do not have in their possession. And with the supplement of information provided by Sprint and based upon Sprint's representation that Sprint does not have this information, the motion to compel is withdrawn in regards to this document request number 5. The last document request I would like to address this afternoon is document request number 6. Document request number 6, ITC requests copies of documents and other discovery responses that's in Sprint's possession that they have provided in other cases, for example, the Swift-Hill arbitration proceeding and Sprint and MCC certification proceedings in the Swift-Hill area. And again, those matters are similar and issues are similar to this proceeding. Sprint has objected to this request with general objections that is overly broad and also states that these requests seek irrelevant information. Clearly, there may be information in the request in the listed proceedings that we list under document request number 6 that are relevant or may lead to the discovery of relevant information for this proceeding. Reviewing Sprint and other parties' responses in those other proceedings, will allow ITC to more fully understand the Sprint-MCC relationship and provide information that will allow for the development of a complete record in this proceeding. While it may not be proper to consolidate these proceedings, this request by ITC is clearly within the bounds of relevancy as set forth in South Dakota law. This request simply requires Sprint provide copies of information and responses that are already in Sprint's possession and been submitted in other proceedings. For that, we request that you would order Sprint to fully respond to document request number 6. Commission, I've gone through a number of document requests, and I've tried to be expeditious about using your time and reviewing our arguments that have previously been submitted in paper form to you. I'd like to just summarize the numbers that we're speaking about here for your records and for the record. ITC requests its motion to compel be granted in regards to document request number 2, document request number 3, interrogatory 14, number 15, number 16, number 17, and number 18, and document request number 6. Additionally, the motion is withdrawn based upon Sprint's representation that no information or documents exist in their possession in regarding interrogatory number 20 and document request number 5. Thank you for your consideration of our motion, Commission. I appreciate your time.
And that actually went very well. I don't know what we all did on our end, but it fixed the problem, certainly. So normally we hold questions until we've heard from all parties. I know that there are some clarification questions people want to ask to be able to aid in their understanding. So as long as it's all right with my colleagues, I might have us take questions at this time for Mr. Overcash. Okay, let's go ahead and proceed. Ms. Wiest, you had some questions?
Yes, I just wanted to clarify. This is Elaine Wiest. When you're talking about, and this one you're cutting in and out, so I don't know if I have this correct, talking about document request number 2 and 3, you mentioned some documents that had been provided by Sprint, and then I believe you said that the remaining issue is a copy of the agreement between Sprint and MCC. Is that the only document at issue now?
Yes, in regards to interrogatory number 7, Sprint has identified their agreements between Sprint and MCC, and in that they have identified one agreement. And so when I say the only issue left is the production of that one agreement, that is because only one Sprint-MCC agreement has been identified under interrogatory number 7.
Request number 2 and number 3, the only thing that you're seeking to compel at this time is a copy of the agreement between Sprint and MCC.
James Overcash, you can correct if you heard me. It sort of cut in and out there.
That's the only question I have right now.
This is Commissioner Johnson. But didn't document request number 2, you asked for agreements with all end users?
I did. We did in South Dakota. For cash, we did in South Dakota. My understanding is that the agreement, that there is a single agreement, that is with MCC, and they do not have other current agreements with other cable companies in South Dakota.
We're just all looking through our paperwork here for questions, so we'll pause for just a moment. Have no other questions. Well, I might ask one more. Mr. Okesh, Dusty Johnson here. You're asking for a list of those individuals that negotiated on behalf of Sprint with MCC, and that the individuals that they're aware of for MCC that negotiated with Sprint. Can you you address this a little bit in your brief and a little bit in your oral arguments? Could you give me a little bit fuller understanding of how that could lead to some information that may be relevant?
Well, for example, Commissioner, and we obviously haven't explained. This is James Overcash for the record. There has not been an exchange of direct testimony, but I believe that Sprint will attempt to discuss or have someone discuss what the relationship is between MCC and Sprint and what the factors were in how they become a comm carrier. I think that is interesting, but also it may not be someone that was involved in the development of the relationship to start with. I think it's important to know the people that are involved in the relationship for that matter. Two, if they were involved in the development of a relationship and it happens to be someone that Sprint puts on the stand in South Dakota to maybe explain a different topic, if I knew that they're in the participating in the development of the Sprint-MCC relationship, I may be able to ask questions that are relevant at that time with the knowledge that they had also participated in the development of that agreement. Additionally, in terms of MCC, a non-party to this proceeding, we may want to do some type of a discovery request or request for someone from MCC to appear or to provide information, and it makes it difficult to direct that request to a large organization without knowing who participated in the negotiation and determination as to what that agreement was going to provide. Currently, maybe all that's in the agreement, Commissioner, maybe there's a list of who participated. I assume someone has signed it. But I haven't seen the agreement yet to know what information may or may not be contained in there. And again, I think it also is important for the commission to remember that when we're in the discovery stage of the proceeding, we're talking about information that may lead to the discovery of relevant information. It's a very broad standard that has to be met to allow the discovery to take place. And I think that listing of names that participated in an agreement that's central to what's going on here is clearly within the bounds of that relevancy requirement. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. That is helpful. Any other questions for Mr. Overcash at this time? If not, we will turn to oral arguments from Sprint, the other party to the case. Mr. Zork, are you on the line?
Yes, Chairman.
Would you like to proceed?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you great.
I'll take these in the same order that Mr. Overcash did and try to make sure I hit all of his points without being redundant to my written submissions. One couple of points I'd like to make that would apply to all of these requests is that South Dakota law provides a privilege against disclosing trade secrets. I don't disagree with Mr. Overcash. The best form for protecting that would be a filing for a protection order under 15626, but these arbitrations are on kind of a short leash. In my filings, I've requested the commission, if it should order discovery of some of this information, that it give us some of those protections rather than submitting a separate motion for it. I put it in my response. If the commission wants a separate motion at some time on that, I would be more than happy to make it. With that, I'd like to address the issues as I see them, as I see what's being pushed here. The first is that of the agreement, essentially his request 2 and 3, the agreement between MCC and Sprint. The one thing that I think is obvious here is that this service is being provisioned to individuals, end users, jointly with MCC and Sprint. We've provided in discovery the Sprint for cable operators outline that goes to every cable operator, is open to any cable operator in this state or any other state to provide these services, where Sprint would work with cable companies to provision services to end users. The agreement we then enter into with cable companies deals with issues, multiple services, some that are not regulated, and those are highly confidential and highly protected by the cable companies, because these cable companies and working with Sprint are trying to compete with local ILECs, who of course would like to see everybody's costs. Now, the first thing I'd say about how Mr. Overcash has presented his argument is he is not, there's a substantial difference between saying that I need to know how this relationship works functionally versus asking for rates and costs. Of course, the rates and costs are very important to cable companies. I don't see how the agreement adds anything to the relationship. They know how we're going to provision this. We've explained how we're going to move the traffic. What the agreement brings to the table, I don't see that has anything additional in dealing with interconnection. Now, if the commission should feel the agreement to actually how or the relationship in exchanging and moving the traffic has some relevance, we are requesting that the commission give us protective order and allow us to redact the more highly confidential things such as rates, rollouts, those types of things from the document. And as I understood Mr. Overcash's argument, that is not information that would necessarily be something he would be looking for in any case. The rates, the cost exchange between Sprint and MCC, and some responsibilities for who's carrying what on the financial side. This is important from the standpoint.
Mr. Wazorek?
I think you're on mute.
No, I'm not. Mr. Wazorek?
Yeah.
Yeah, hold on just a second here. Our court reporter lost you. You faded out a bit about 30 seconds ago. Sean, do you know where you last had clarity?
Okay, can you hear me, Tao?
He's on a hand.
As I understood Mr. Overcash's argument, that is not information that would necessarily be something he would be looking for in any case, the rates.
Tal, can you hear us?
I can, yeah. I think I've got an idea. I've already got my handset picked up, so are you ready for me to continue, Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Mr. Wazorek, go ahead, proceed.
So to the extent that the commission would find or desire the agreement be produced, I think it's allowable and appropriate for us to be able to redact those highly confidential information that could be used by a competitor. If the desire is, as Mr. Overcash says, is to simply see how these parties interrelate in the delivery of traffic, that's not necessary for that in any case. It shouldn't be surprising. This commission sees it quite often where there are switch contracts, contracts with third-party vendors. There are always subject to confidentiality agreements, and Sprint as a party has to protect those agreements under those confidentiality agreements, and that's what we're doing here. And nor does it fly in the face of this commission's protective order, because the protective order was clear that we did not waive other privileges or confidentiality, and we would be entitled to raise those issues later if we felt something went beyond the means of discovery or relevancy. With that, I would move on to number 14 as how the parties would be relevant. I even with Mr. Overcash's explanation of why identities of who negotiates contract could be relevant, I don't believe they are relevant or lead to admissible evidence. Certainly, he can ask every one of our witnesses if he wants to cross-examine them, did you have any part in drafting the agreement? I'm not sure that has, you could ask it at the hearing, but I'm not sure what that brings to any kind of cross-examination or admissible evidence. He certainly can't go into what was the negotiations. I think that has absolutely no relevance. Absolutely is not admissible to any type of proceeding as what the historic relevance in negotiations with a third party is when providing services. For that reason, I think for the Sprint, there's no need to ID as to as to MCC, I'm not sure where they draw their lines. In addition to the relevancy, this would cause Sprint, if they're trying to figure out every MCC person was on it or negotiated or sent anything out, they'd have to delve through every box and every email to see who was involved on behalf of MCC's side. To me, that doesn't make any sense. We're not calling any MCC witnesses. And for those reasons, I don't believe the identities of who negotiated on behalf of MCC becomes relevant. Number six.
Mr. Wazorek?
I write every word and I'm getting every other, so it's not going to make a bit of sense.
Mr. Wazorek?
Yes.
We lost you again about 30 seconds ago. Our apologies. Ms. Bashan, where did you start to lose them?
Okay. They're trying to figure out every MCC person on it or negotiated it or sent anything out. They have to go through every box and email and see what's involved on behalf of the MCC side. And that doesn't make any sense. We're not calling any MCC witnesses.
Did you get that?
Yeah, yes, I did. Just a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Claire? Are you still there? Commissioner?
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm actually going to try using the speaker on my phone because I can generally talk louder and maybe that'll come through better. I actually think the court reporter did a pretty good job there at the end on my 14 and 15. I don't see the relevancy of the MCC identities, and even if there would be some arguable relevancies, overly broad and unduly burdensome because the Sprint personnel would have to go back through all their documents, pull up whatever documents they had out of storage on the historical negotiation, and try to figure out every MCC person that might have been involved. I don't think that's appropriate. I think the amount of work for what, even if you would take Mr. Overcash's analogy as establishing admissible evidence or potentially admissible evidence, the amount of work would not arise to the amount of work necessitated to try to run all this down for what little relevancy or what little evidence might be received is inappropriate. The next interrogatories he had were 16 and 17, that those had to do with telecommunications. Mr. Overcash, though, they don't really brief it in their motion, started talking about common carrier status. These are not relevant from the standard of common carrier. He made a statement that we have to serve all. The standard is that we have to indiscriminately serve similarly situated people. We are indiscriminately serving proposed to indiscriminately serve the end users in conjunction with MCC in the Swifttel area. Also, it's clear that we are indiscriminately serving all cable companies by our proposal that we sent out. These blur to somewhat when we get down in these later interrogatories on 16 and 17. If you look at what they're asking, the 16, 17, and 18 is 16 asks that they identify all agreements nationwide between Sprint and any party that provides the same terms and conditions. Now, the interrogatory in its face is not limited, first of all, to cable companies, assuming that it would, because of the way it was asked, it would have to be limited to cable companies. One, in reading 16, it has to also read 17, which then asks, give us every agreement with anybody nationwide that differs, and then 18, how do they all differ? First of all, I don't believe they're any relevance to what we're doing in South Dakota, what we're doing in other states or nationwide with other companies. Secondly, to look at every document and do an in-depth analysis of every variation for every party we serve is clearly overly broad and unduly burdensome on to Sprint and an inappropriate request. In this situation, in South Dakota, in this cable operation, though we offer it to any cable operation in South Dakota, we currently have one company that is signed on, and that's MCC. And if the commission finds there's relevancy of documents
and a contract. It should stop at what's in this state, not what we've done in New York, not not the agreements we have with people in Ohio or any other state. Those agreements are going to be those agreements are made with even separate companies. For example, Time Warner, and we had those agreements are subject to confidentiality agreements. We had asked to put those parties on notice, and this this request for every agreement nationwide is just simply overly broad. Trying to make sure I hit on everyone. The last one is, I believe then he said 20 request for production number 5, they felt were satisfied, as was request for admission number 3. The document request number 6 asked for discovery in these other proceedings. What Sprint has no problem with giving ITC the discovery in the proceedings in which it is involved. Sprint has objected to providing discovery in its arbitration with Brookings or the CLEC proceeding with Brookings. We don't see how that's relevant or likely lead to admissible evidence in this situation. Also, we have confidentiality orders, at least in the other arbitration, and we'd have to scrub those documents to see what we've gotten from Sprint, or see what Sprint has received from the Brookings company that might be confidential. And finally, it was ITC was against consolidation of those actions, and now I just want to write on all the discovery, which we think is inappropriate. Given with all the interruptions, Mr. Chairman, I believe I've hit on every issue, but I'd certainly be glad to take questions.
Thanks very much, Mr. Wazorek. At this time, we will see if anybody has any questions. I have one with regard to interrogatory 14 and 15. I understand your argument about you don't think it'll lead to admissible evidence. To me, the request on its face doesn't appear overly burdensome. And so if it's a close call, one might be predisposed toward the, granting the motion to compel. Could you give me an idea as to what would make 14 and 15 so burdensome?
As to 14, I believed on its face when it was first asked it was overly burdensome. When ITC narrowed the request to anybody at a director level or above, I believe it would remove the overly burdensome, and as to 14, I believe I just argued as not likely to lead to admissible evidence. As to 15, a blanket request for us to identify who, we might have been getting information from MCC, that would cause us to have to go back through all of our paperwork we would have received from MCC during the course of the negotiations to try to identify everybody on MCC's behalf. And even if you limited to a certain level of office, the negotiator, there's no guarantee we know exactly what these people's positions were at MCC. We'd be stuck trying to figure out everybody who was involved or sent a piece of paper or was involved in email strings and identifying them and running them all down to see what their level was at MCC.
Mr. Wazorek, this is Monica Barone, and I would also add that this agreement was entered. This is Monica Barone with Sprint. I would just add that this agreement was entered into. I'm sorry? This agreement was entered into a couple of years ago, so it may be very difficult for us to track down the identity of those who were involved in the negotiations. Thank you.
Mr. Wazorek, did you have anything additional on that question?
To follow up with Ms. Barone, you mean? I do not.
Advisors or commissioners at this time for Mr. Wazorek or anyone from Sprint? Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner Colbeck.
Mr. Mazur, do you agree with Ms. Marone on that, that it would be very difficult to find those employees? And if so, what would make it so difficult? I guess, how old are those contracts?
Commissioner, obviously I wasn't involved in negotiation on behalf of Sprint or MCC and their agreement. I believe from what information I've been able to obtain that the negotiations took place more than 2 years ago to set up the standard agreement. And so having worked with large corporations on both sides before, my guess would be that those boxes are long ago in storage or in people's desk drawers spread throughout the nation at different offices of Sprint, potentially MCC, and to track all down everybody who's involved in that and then make a determination of whether they met even a certain level of a director or manager is going to end up being very difficult.
For Sprint. Seeing none at this time, thanks, Mr. Wazork. Thanks, Ms. Barone. At this time, we'll proceed to staff and staff arguments.
This is Caravan Bachman for staff.
Start over. I had muted you. Go ahead.
This is Caravan Bachman for staff. I will simply start from the beginning and go through the list of document requests and interrogatories that the parties did. First, the document request 2 and 3, the contract, any contracts between MCC and Sprint. I can understand where the parties would want, where ITC would want that contract to fully understand the relationship between Sprint and MCC. I do, however, believe that some information contained in that contract would be irrelevant. Some confidential, highly competitive type information that could be redacted and still allow the parties a complete understanding of the relationship between MCC and Sprint. So I would urge the commissioners to look at a redaction possibly of that contract. 14 and 15, interrogatory requests, the request for a list of all of those involved in a negotiation. I would think through personnel, through the use of computers, it could be possible to find those involved in the negotiation. And it wouldn't be too terribly burdensome. However, I would think the only real relevant people involved in that negotiation would be those parties to the contract. And those names would all be apparent if a redacted contract, according to document request 2 and 3, would be produced. Interrogatory request 16, 17, 18. It seems to me this type of information to understand the common carrier status could be found using other types of information, possibly those contracts, those dockets as they came before other state commissions, to understand what their decisions were, the information they looked at, and that could avoid the disclosure of very confidential contracts out there that contain a lot of information very much irrelevant to what's happening in South Dakota right now. So I think there's other ways to find that without requiring complete disclosure of every single contract out there. And aside from that, that does, it's a very burdensome request. I think that could be very difficult considering the amount of contracts entered into with both consumers and other companies. Finally, that takes us to document request number 6, and that would be the request for discovery from other dockets currently before the commission. And I would agree with Sprint that that information is provided to parties to the case and isn't necessary for disclosure to a non-party.
Thanks, Ms. Van Bakkeren. Any questions from commissioners or staff for staff or commissioner advisors for staff? Hearing none, are there any other questions for any of the parties? You know, I I have, I think, a couple. Mr. Obercash, are you there?
Yes, Commissioner.
You know, I'm trying to hone in on 16, 17, 18 and to determine, you know, trying to weigh the relative merits of giving this. I mean, particularly 17. I mean, we're talking about all agreements out there that may be different anywhere in the country. Do you really think that level, that kind of request is going to be necessary for you to get a feel for whether or not there's a common carrier status here for Sprint?
Commissioner, I haven't looked at the agreements in terms of what's available. I obviously haven't looked even at the agreement in South Dakota because it hasn't been produced. If you look at the combination of interrogatory number 16 that just says identify all the ones that are exactly the same, in terms of have the same terms, conditions, and pricing, I don't know if that is everyone's exactly the same or there are none exactly the same. And so I suppose from the standpoint of identify, you know, the interrogatory numbers, I could see where if the answer is every agreement is exactly the same, everybody gets the same pricing, the same terms and conditions, then 17 doesn't become very burdensome. I could see that the relevancy of limiting it, and it was, I guess the thought was in terms of relevancy to where they're providing back office operations to a carrier, that was the concept of those agreements. It wasn't in regards to one of their subsidiaries' wireless offerings in Texas. It was regards to the back office operations. But in terms of narrowing that scope and then narrowing to the scope of whether they're all the same or whether they're not all the same, And I don't know if I think that analysis is very burdensome to start with. My presumption would be, frankly, I don't think they're going to be the same. And so from that standpoint of just, I guess, a representation that they're not identical may be enough in terms of people to understand of whether there's a, you know, what's going on here and does it rise to the level of being a common carrier.
A response to, you know, staff's point, Ms. M. Bachern's point that perhaps by looking at other commissions' decisions, other filings, information that already is in the public domain there, that the same type of information could be gathered by your party?
Well, Mr. Commissioner, I don't believe if you look at, you know, we're talking about, like, for example, the case currently before us, I can't, haven't yet seen a copy of the agreement between MCC and Sprint. My guess would be, and I believe Sprint to be, you know, very capable lawyers, that they've taken the same tack in every other jurisdiction, and so even if I scrubbed the other jurisdictions, I wouldn't be able to come up with terms and conditions that I could find on a public record. Now, I may be mistaken by that, but I would believe Ms. Barone to be a very good lawyer and to have done her work in terms of making sure if they consistently hold the position that these are not going to be in the public domain, that I would be unable to find that information in the public domain anywhere.
This is Ms. Brown. May I respond?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just, I think this gets down to the argument, and the basic argument or the legal standard here is the offer that Sprint has made to cable companies. Sprint has provided evidence and attachments to the interrogatories demonstrating how we make this offer available to all cable companies. The contracts themselves, however, are going to, each cable company typically is different and they have different needs and have different geographic scopes, different numbers of household paths, and typically they don't want the exact same thing as each other, as every other cable company. The bottom line is whether Sprint is offering its services indifferently to all cable companies, and we believe we put the evidence in the record that we're doing that already. The actual contract is going to have or contain those terms and conditions that reflect what that particular cable company needs. So to the extent that we're trying to compare all of the cable companies across the country, that would be extremely burdensome because, as been stated before, We're looking at different states. We're looking at different cable companies. We're looking at different services, different requests, and that would be beyond what we believe is relevant to the state of South Dakota. One, whether Sprint is offering its services differently, and number two, we have one cable company in the state of South Dakota, and if there was another cable company that wanted to partake in some of these services or all of these services, Sprint would be willing to provide those as well. But again, it depends on the cable company and their particular circumstances.
Question for Mr. Overcash. What would Swiftel's opinion be how would you view a commission move to allow for redaction with regard to document requests 2 and 3?
Excuse me, or Swiftel, I'm sorry.
The commission's, if we were to give Sprint an opportunity to redact the agreement between MCC and Sprint.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, this is Jim Overcash. I didn't recognize if you're asking Swiftel that or if you're asking me that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Overcash.
Okay.
Interstate, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. From our standpoint in regards to the Sprint-MCC agreement in South Dakota, we do not believe it's proper for Sprint to unilaterally redact and make choices in that agreement what is or is not confidential and then provide, I'll say, what's left on the bone to ITC. We do believe it may be appropriate, and we think Sprint could have done this in terms of providing a motion for a more restrictive protective order. Let's not lose sight of the concept that the parties worked on a protective order before discovery was even sent in this proceeding, and it was fully my expectation at that time that Sprint would know that we would be asking for the Sprint-MCC agreement. At the same extent, do I think Sprint could have sought a more restrictive protective order and provided the Sprint-MCC agreement for review in camera by the commission and by attorneys for parties? I believe that could have gone down some process like that, and they chose not to.
Advisors for any of the parties. Yes, Commissioner Kolbeck.
Yes, this is Commissioner Kolbeck. I was just wondering, this is for Mr. Bozorek or Ms. Brone. Is there any ballpark figure as to how many contracts we're talking about? Are we talking about hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands? How many agreements Sprint has with MCC that would be the same or different? I don't care. I just am looking for some sort of reference point as how many what we're talking about.
And Commissioner Kolbeck, are you talking about with respect to interrogatory 16, 17, and 18?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Zork?
Mr. Chairman or Commissioner Kolbeck, it kind of depends on how you read their question. Their question was wide open and talked about all agreements and didn't limit it to cable companies. I'm not in-house with Sprint, but if you went all types of agreements, I'm sure there are thousands. If you limit it to cable companies, I'm sure it's significantly less than that there are agreements. So that's the best I can provide to the commission at this point in response to your question.
And this is Ms. Barone, and I agree with Mr. Weisberg. I agree that the question was very broad, and it would be hundreds, maybe thousands of agreements. With respect to cable companies, there are 12, but we have to remember that those cable companies, number one, don't operate in South Dakota. It's not clear whether the commission, first of all, we would have to contact every single one of those companies that are not located in South Dakota, request their permission to reveal their contracts, and go through a process of, I don't even know if we can get permission. I'd have to go back and look at each and every contract to see the parameters of our relationship before I can even respond to that question. But what really concerns me is that these are cable companies that are not located in the state of South Dakota. And almost every state except for one, we've typically produced the one contract that was in question. And I would suggest that, number one, I still don't believe that the contract itself is relevant because it's the offer, not the contract resulting from the offer, that's relevant. And number two, these companies are located outside of the state of South Dakota. And number three, it would take a lot of effort to try to get those contracts produced in a situation where we don't believe they're relevant to the interconnection that we're requesting from Interstate in this proceeding.
Any other questions by advisors or commissioners?
This is Relaine Weist. I had a question for Mr. Overcash. Going to 16, 17, 18, would it be a problem to limit these to table-type agreements?
This is James Overcash. I believe it would not be a problem in terms of it would be 12 agreements. If they would have produced, I would also tell you, if they would have produced the 12 agreements in response to 16, 17, and 18, I do not believe we would have filed a motion to compel in regards to those interrogatories and the related document request.
Interrogatory states identify all agreements, but you want the production of the agreements as well, just not just the identification of them?
Correct.
And
all documents that are identified in the interrogatory request.
So for 16, 17, and 18, to the extent that Sprint would produce the 12 agreements?
That would be acceptable.
Thank you.
And we'll reiterate we reiterate our objection to producing contracts that are not relevant to the state of South Dakota. And just so the record is clear, I may have stated this before again. This is Monica. We could be in breach of our contract with those companies outside the state of South Dakota if we do not get their permission, and we can't guarantee they'll grant permission to produce those contracts.
More advisor questions?
Yes, again, this is Relaine Wee. So, Mr. Overcash, how would you go about resolving that problem?
Generally, well, it's difficult since I've never looked at the contracts, and so that someone can tell you what may or may not be in them. Typically, the contracts that I have seen with most companies that contain a confidentiality requirement also provide for a process by which, if that document is required to be produced in relationship to some type of legal proceeding, and I believe this arbitration would qualify as that type of proceeding, the requirement upon a party like Sprint would be to provide notice of that requirement to provide the document to the other party to the agreement. The other party to the agreement then has the opportunity to, again, understand what the protective order involved in the agreement is, understand who's going to see the document. Here, again, we're talking about the production of documentation that is subject to a protective order that's been stipulated to the parties and already entered in this agreement. So when we're talking about the flow of a confidential document, it's not something that's going to be sent out to the whole United States. We're talking about something that's being provided underneath the order of this commission, and that if they provide probably notice to the other side, they probably complied. At the same degree, Ms. Weiss, it's difficult to tell you what those documents say because I've never seen them. I can just tell you from my experience what's typical, and what's typical when the document's required for a legal proceeding that it's only a notice requirement.
Cash, other questions by commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, I think at this time it might be most helpful for the commissioners to receive advice from Ms. Weist. We've heard lots of new information, and Roland, if you're all right with that, if you
sure.
want to provide any kind of a recommendation or guidance toward commissioners as we move toward making our decision.
Thank you. This is Relaine Weist. With respect to document request number 2 and 3, it appeared that the issue was essentially the copy of the agreement between Sprint and MCC. In my opinion, based on the issues that are set forth in this proceeding, the copy of that agreement is relevant to the proceeding and it should be provided. To the extent that there are trade secrets or highly confidential information in those in that agreement. The protective order does specifically state that a party didn't waive its right to redact competitively sensitive material from any designated material. So I believe that they would be that Sprint would be allowed to present the agreement in a redacted form, to the extent that after ITC has had an opportunity to see that, to understand what has been redacted, then I assume ITC could come back and say that too much was redacted or make other types of motions against that. But at this point, I think it should be allowable to provide that in a redacted form. With respect to, I think we're down to 14 and 15, I think that information should be provided. I don't see it as that burdensome. And I would agree with Mr. Overcash. Based on the standards that are for discovery, I think it would meet that standard. 16, 17, and 18, I do have more of a problem with that. But the problem is that, you know, reading of the cases, it does appear to be an issue as to a common carrier status. And so I have a problem saying that this is not relevant, other agreements with other carriers. And so at this point, I would say that Sprint should be required to provide those agreements with other cable companies to the extent that they are able to do so within the confines of those agreements. I don't see how I can overrule confidentiality requirements within the agreements. But to the extent, like Mr. Overcash stated, that those agreements are allowed to be provided, then subject to some sort of a legal proceeding, then I think they can be provided. And then I believe the last one is, document request number 6. Again, I think given the standard for discovery that document request number 6 should also be granted. I understand Mr. Wysorek's concerns about problems with confidentiality. Again, to the extent that the information in those responses are confidential, then they'll just have to state in their response that this was confidential, and if they can't overcome that confidentiality, it wouldn't be provided.
Do commissioners have clarifying questions for Ms. Wiest on her recommendation? You know, on 16, 17, and 18, Ms. Wiest, I'm still sort of struggling with. I mean, you would have them provide the agreement, so. But that's not what 16, 17, and 18 asked for. Didn't they ask for the agreements to be identified and then in 18 to articulate the differences?
Yes, that's right. That would have been my first preference, is to say, well, you just have to identify the agreements. But I thought they, in their response, they mentioned that pursuant to a document request, they would have to be provided anyway. And maybe somebody can correct me on that. When I asked Mr. Overcash about whether they needed to be actually produced as opposed to just identified.
Okay, explain that to me again, why they would need to be produced as opposed to identified.
I guess the question is, and maybe I should just ask this to Mr. Overcash, is it your understanding that to the extent they identify documents in there pursuant to another document-related request, they would actually have to produce the document, Mr. Overcash?
That would be correct, Ms. Weiss, in terms of if there were documents that were identified in the interrogatories that pursuant to document request, number one was it that they'd have to be, that document request that all agreements and documents identified would be, a copy would be produced.
And to the extent, if the commissions are uncomfortable with that, my recommendation, I guess an alternative could be to limit them to actually just identifying the documents and then stating which documents that they identify do have identical terms and conditions, and stating which documents have perhaps material differences in terms and conditions, and limiting those requests to that. That would be my alternative.
Would you, under interrogatory 18, Would you just have them state that there are material differences, or would you have them outline all of the differences that I think 18 asked for?
I guess that second alternative I had was just that they identify the agreements, the ones that are the same, same terms and conditions of the Sprint MCC, and then be required to state which ones have different material terms and conditions, but not necessarily identify each different term and condition in all 12 contracts.
Okay. Ms. Wiest, with regard to your recommendation on interrogatory 15, and that has to do with the negotiators for MCC, you know, I'm struggling with this one. This seems to be more burdensome than 14, and I don't know that we get, you know, that there's quite the same benefit. Can you say anything that will ease my concerns?
I guess I don't see how identifying the people, especially when you're talking about the director level or above, it would be all that burdensome to the extent that they know it. I mean, but, you know, if they were negotiating with MCC, they know who they're negotiating with. I mean, if you get the one person on the one side who is doing the negotiation on Sprint side, then I would think that person would know who they were negotiating with on the MCC side.
Yeah, I think my concern comes from, I mean, I just know how many people, I mean, I haven't ever been involved in an agreement like this, but I know with agreements of far less complexity how many folks can be involved, and I know what happens to, you know, memories and email trails after 2 years. Your recommendation is probably a good one. It's just it's one that I'm having a hard time getting to. So, Commissioner Colbeck, did you have a question or comment?
I do. On that interrogatory number 14 and 15, where does the term director come from, and how much authority do they have?
To whom are you directing?
Mr. Zorich or Ms. Barone, what is a director level in Sprint? What does that mean? Is that a first level manager? Are they three from the top? Or could you give me a little explanation on that?
This is Mr. Wazorik.
I think that probably depends on the department. The director is over managers, and directors typically report to VPs, but not in all organizations. As you can imagine, we have a number of organizations. In some respects, some directors report to directors, and some report to VPs, but managers are below directors.
Ms. Barone, we heard you fine, except I think early on you said the directors are over managers, and then later on you said managers are over directors. Could you, and I probably misheard you, could you just clarify which is the case?
Can you hear me? It's hard to hear you. No, you had it right the first time. Managers report to directors. Directors typically report to vice presidents, but in some parts of the organization, you may have a director report to a director who reports to a vice president. So it depends on the specific organization, but managers always report to directors. Typically, because I don't know every single organization within our company. I don't know. There may be managers reporting to other level managers. I just don't know.
Does any other questions on behalf of commissioners or advisors? Opportunity for rebuttal. Mr. Overcash, anything that you would like to throw into the mix here?
There's any questions that I need to be answered. Again, for example, on the identity of individuals, you know, I think we're looking for the important people that are involved there. We're not, you know, I just don't think the objections serve in terms of what we wanted. With the identity of individuals speak for themselves. And I also think in regards to when we have people we have Sprint that is promoting themselves as a common carrier, those other agreements become important, and I appreciate the consideration the Commission's giving to all these issues on this motion to compel. So thank you for that. And unless there's a question for me, I would not have anything else to burden your time with.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
So you can hear me, but they can't.
Any comments by commissioners or any motions? You know, I don't mind making a motion, but I think mine might differ from the recommendation given by Mrs. Wiest. So I don't want to jump in there if one of you have something ready to go.
It's interesting you say that because mine was going to differ from it too. So it'll be interesting to see whether we agree. There are so many different items here. I can't imagine that three of us will agree completely on all of them, but. I'm struggling a bit with the 16, 17, and 18. Just to get some discussion out on the floor here on where we are so we can get to some fruition on these. The item number two, I concur that I support with the redaction. Understanding that there's some competitively sensitive material, and certainly there needs to be that redaction. On 14 and 15, I believe we should have signatories only that should be pursued on the... I think it's too broad, and I do support them, but should be limited to signatures only. On 16, 17, 18, again, I think it's too broad. There's that which is not relative to South Dakota in any form of motion that is put together, I think should be included so that it's, let me make it more clear, that which is not relative to South Dakota should not be a part of the motion. Should be only limited to documents that have material differences. On the last item, number six, I do not think that we should compel that item at all. And that's just to give you an idea of where I am on these items, so that if you're planning on attempting to articulate a motion, you might not.
Well, and perhaps the easiest thing to, bifurcate isn't the right word because we have more than two issues here, but perhaps I sort of see there as four subgroupings of motions to compel, and, perhaps I'll offer them up individually and we can take a vote if that would be appropriate. You know, first I would move that with regard to DR2 and DR3 that the commission agree with a motion to compel Sprint to produce the agreement between MCC and Sprint, but that Sprint would have an opportunity to redact the appropriate information.
Second.
I concur.
Motion is made and carries. With regard to interrogatory 14, I guess I'll be more than four subsets here because I may bust this into two, too. With regard to interrogatory 14, I would move that we agree with the motion to compel for director level and higher for those that negotiated on behalf of Sprint.
On second.
This is just for 14.
I'll concur.
That motion is made and carries. With regard to interrogatory 15, I would move that we not compel Sprint to provide information on those that negotiate on behalf of MCC.
Sorry.
I'll dissent.
The motion carries by a 2-1 vote. With regard to interrogatories 16 through 18, I would move that the commission agree that Sprint should provide a list of agreements with cable providers, noting only which of those have essentially identical terms and then noting those which have material differences. and just make that list available, but that the agreements themselves not be produced.
Sorry. I concur.
Motion carries. And finally, with regard to DR6, I would move that Sprint be required to produce that information.
I'll second that.
I'll dissent.
And with 2-1 vote, that motion carries. Probably good we bifurcated it, because there were a few instances we were not in agreement. I believe that resolves all outstanding issues with respect to this docket. I would pause for just a moment to make sure that that is the case.
I believe so.
Okay. With that, we will proceed to thank you very much to all the parties. We appreciate it. And we do apologize again for the technical difficulties. With that, the commission will proceed toward our second item on today's agenda, TC06-176, and that is in the matter of the petition of Sprint Communications Company, LP, for arbitration pursuant to the Telecom Act of 96 to resolve issues relating to an interconnection agreement with Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business as Swiftel. We have two questions before the commission today. The first is, shall the commission grant the motion to compel filed by Sprint? We also have a motion to compel filed by Swiftel. At this time, I would look toward those representing the parties to see whether or not you want to take those questions separately or want to address both your motion and your response when you're giving your oral argument. We'll go ahead and do those separately. The first question we'll take up will be, shall the commission grant the motion to compel filed by Sprint? As the moving party, we would look to Sprint to provide a oral argument.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me? Sorry for Sprint. Go ahead. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right. Cowboy Zorick on behalf of Sprint. I will go through kind of the same format that Mr. Orbakash established, taking these one at a time in the order in which the questions were posed. The motion to compel that was filed on behalf of Sprint seeks, frankly, just mostly clarifications and direct answers to a couple questions that we believe were read in a way that was a tortured reading, so that they wouldn't have to respond. Was first our request, interrogatories 2 and 3. These agreements, those interrogatories made fairly straightforward requests that they identify, taking request 2 first, any telecommunications traffic, either directly or indirectly through a tandem connection, exchanged during the last 12 months pursuant to a written agreement. When Sprint received Swiftel's response, we thought that perhaps they misread this question. We thought it was clear that we wanted to know who did they directly receive traffic from, as in a direct interconnect, and who did they receive traffic from indirectly through a tandem. The way Sprint responded, the way Swiftel responded, I tell you what, I'll say Brookings instead of Swiftel. That might be easier for everybody to follow. The way Brookings responded, it's impossible to tell how they're connected with any company they identified. In request 4 in their response to our motion, Brookings said, well, we provided in response to request 4 interconnection agreements with WWC, Midco, and an agreement with our affiliate wireless service. But if you read those agreements, we don't know if they're directly or indirectly connected. We think they should be compelled to explain to us how they're receiving this traffic, whether it's a direct connect or an indirect connect. The same is true for request 3, which talks where they raise and say, well, we've got EAS agreements with Quest and ITC, but we can't tell you how they're connected. I find the fact that can't believe that their engineer or consultant doesn't know how they're delivering traffic under an EAS system.
Now, I agree that they don't necessarily have to go out and beat the bushes from a third party to get this information, but I find it highly improbable that you couldn't walk down the hall and ask an engineer or call up your consultant and say, how did we connect with these guys? I've never had a telecommunications carrier in ILEC tell me they can't tell me how they're connected for the purposes of EAS or how they're actually connected with any of the wireless carriers delivering traffic to them, whether it's direct or indirect, and if indirect, over what tandem. In South Dakota, the choices as to what tandem is fairly limited. I think they're playing kind of fast and loose with their analysis, and these are fairly straightforward questions, and I think they should be compelled to answer 2 and 3 and provide that information. The next interrogatory we requested was 15. Now, Brookings takes some exception to the fact claiming that Sprint is asking multiple follow-up questions. Those questions were never intended to go beyond the initial question, but given how Brookings was responding to some of the questions, where it appeared they were misreading the questions, whether purposefully or not, we submitted follow-up questions to try to hone down what we're asking so they understood it so we could avoid a motion to compel. Under 15, that question asked them to identify and describe in detail how we would directly interconnect with the Brookings office. The follow-up questions we asked, they did give a description, and as we weren't sure by their diagram whether they're showing a two-way trunk, they have since clarified that, yes, it's a two-way trunk. They did that in their response. And then we also asked is whether Brookings agrees to share under their diagram, agrees to share cost of a two-way facility. Their argument in response to that follow-up or that clarifying question was that was beyond the scope of the question. The question asked them to describe in detail how the interconnections would be designed and installed. I think it's fairly standard that when you're designing and installing interconnection, you discuss how the costs are going to be counted on that interconnection, and we believe that was within the scope of that question. And we had asked that they answer that part of the question. As to 19, question had to do with two-way interconnection facility. The question specifically asked if Swiftel would not agree would not agree whether they would plan on installing a one-way facility and to the host switch. We did ask a follow-up question if not, do you intend to install a one-way facility to deliver your originating traffic? I think the question should be responded to in that the question specifically asked whether they would agree on installing a facility to deliver Brookings originated traffic to Sprint and at the host switch. As to 26, the 26 is an omit or deny question. And under 26, the question was whether there were technical issues preventing respondents from interconnection indirectly with Sprint for exchange of traffic. In other words, is there any technical issue that prevents an indirect connect between Brookings and Sprint? And Swiftel or Brookings took the position that that was a vague question, and they refused. They did not have sufficient information to answer the question, so essentially they refused to answer, but were just generally categorically denied it. We clarified that question to say, we're only asking whether there's a network problem with this indirect connect, and in this becomes a problem in the way they answer this, because they've not made it clear whether they have existing indirect connects with other telecommunications carriers or how they're done. This fairly straightforward question, and that is there a network technical issue that prevents indirect connect, and if so, what is it? And I think they should be compelled to answer that. It's not a difficult question. It's a fair question. It should simply be explained. We don't want to get to a situation where in the hearing and a witness comes forth and says you can't indirectly connect because we have a network problem that won't allow it. I guess the alternative is if they refuse to answer it, is one has to assume there is no network issue that prevents indirect connection. As to 29, the question for 29 asked Brookings to identify any technical issues which prevented Sprint from sending access traffic and traffic subject to ReciPCOMP to Brookings on the same trunk. Brookings then discussed issues that they have and in sending traffic out over trunk, that they have to send IXC traffic to SDN. However, they did not raise any technical issues, and frankly, this perhaps only takes a clarification, is it appears they did not raise any technical issues with Sprint delivering IXC traffic and ReciPCOMP traffic over the same trunk. We did a follow-up question merely because in the way they answered the question, it appears they might have confused it and thought it going the other way. So our position is either they need to answer as to what issues are what technical issues would exist in traffic being delivered, both those types of traffic being delivered over the same trunk by Sprint to Brookings, or that they should be held to the conclusion that there are none because they have not raised any from that method of traffic delivery. Finally, 38 is fairly simple. Brookings had raised an issue with some of our language dealing with essentially phone books, directories, that it was unfair as the language we had proposed in the interconnection agreement. We asked them to identify all facts supporting their statement on page 24, paragraph 66, that stated, Swiftel opposes Sprint's language because it seeks to obtain preferential treatment for Sprint's end users. They responded that Brookings' current rate for directors is $13.60 per.
Mr. Wisorek?
Yeah.
We need you to stop. You were going pretty quickly there, and I think we need to back up so the court reporter can make sure we are getting things clear.
Okay. We asked them to identify all facts supporting their statement on page 24, paragraph 66, that they stated Swiftel opposes Sprint's language because it
seeks to obtain preferential treatment for Sprint end users. And in their response, when we asked them to give all those facts that support that, they simply stated that the current rate for directories is $13.60 per directory, and we essentially don't know what that means, whether that's a replacement rate or whether that's what they pay for every directory, and if they're going to contend that Sprint has to pay $13.60 per directory for each of its customers. So the only clarification we sought was whether they're asserting that $13.60 is only for additional directories delivered to subscribers, or whether they would contend that it applies to initial directories. And I think that's within the purview of that question when we asked them to identify all facts supporting that, whether they think that they get to charge us for the initial directories. Under that scenario, I apologize if I went a little quickly, commissioners. It gets to be a long time on the phone and yelling into a speaker. If you want to follow the format to take questions now, I'd be more than happy to take them now or wait till after Ms. Cusack.
Let's go ahead and take them now, Tal. Thanks very much for your argument. I don't know that I have questions at this time. Do other commissioners or advisors have any questions? All right. Thanks, Ms. Wazorek. At this point, we will turn to Swiftel and hear their side of the story.
Commissioners, this is Mary Sisak. Mr. Helfer is also on the phone, but as he indicated earlier, I will be conducting the argument or presenting the argument. With respect to requests 2 and 3, well, first of all, just a general comment. We do believe that on a number of these questions, in the guise of clarifying the information that they were seeking, Sprint has, in essence, propounded new questions, which simply is not contemplated in the discovery process and would give them two bites of the apple when Swiftel is limited to asking discovery just once. And basically, if we put forth a bad question and Sprint gave us a bad answer, we're stuck with it. And I think the same should apply to Sprint. But and so we would ask you to not be fooled by the argument that some of these further questions are really incorporated somehow in the original question. They are new questions, and they should be rejected. Specifically with requests 2 and 3, I think a careful reading of the request shows that the identification or the breakout that Sprint is now requesting was not asked for. And as we also said in our response, the information that they have sought has been provided. So we feel that their motion to compel should not be granted in that respect or with respect to questions 2 and 3. With respect to request 15, I'm not sure if Mr. Wazorek has represented that Sprint is withdrawing its objection to the first part of the question where they claim that we did not show whether local interconnection service was a one-way or two-way facility. But our answer is we provided a diagram with an arrow in both directions, which is generally recognized and accepted as indicating traffic flowing in two directions. And so we believe we've answered that part of the question. And with respect to their new follow-up question about sharing the cost of a two-way facility, we maintain that there is nothing in the original question proposed or propounded that in any way asks for any information about cost sharing. And we would ask that that be rejected. On request 19, again, we believe we've answered that question. Our response to request 15 was a diagram showing how we would propose that interconnection between the parties be done, and we have proposed a two-way direct interconnection facility. So we believe that request 19 has been answered. With respect to request 26, this question, Sprint asked a very broad-based question, whether there were any possible reasons why an indirect interconnection or technical reason why an indirect interconnection might not be possible. And then they asked us to admit or deny the statement. We denied the statement, so we answered that part of the question by denying it. And then they asked us to explain if we denied to explain. And we explained our denial, saying we did not have the information to make some kind of assessment of the entire universe of possible indirect interconnections and whether or not there might be a technical issue with any of them. And I would just also further add that if Sprint designed this question, and if Sprint has a particular type of indirect interconnection that they are interested in, they could have very easily explained what indirect interconnection they were asking us to respond to, and then we probably could have responded to the question. But with this kind of open-ended, extremely broad-based, hypothetical situation, we responded that we did not have sufficient information, and that is an appropriate response to an interrogatory. And then with respect to request 29, we, again, are really just on that question. We believe that Sprint has proposed a new question in the guise of asking or filing their motion to compel, and we would just ask that if the commission orders us or compels us to respond to the question, that it be limited to the original question asked. And then with respect to request 38, Sprint asked Swifttel to identify all facts supporting a certain statement. We identified the facts. Now Sprint is asking us to explain what we meant by the facts we identified, and that was not part of their original question. So again, we believe that's a new question that should be rejected. And that concludes my statements.
Appreciate that. At this time, we will see if there are any commissioner or advisor questions for Swifttel.
We have one from Commissioner Colbeck.
Was one posed to me? This is Mary Sifak.
No, Commissioner Colbeck was looking through some of his papers, and I think he decided to hold off on the question for now. Okay. If there are no questions, we will turn to staff and their argument. Ms. Van Bakker, if we could get a quick mic check from you, and then we can see if the parties can hear you.
Okay, can you hear me all right? This is Kara Van Bakker for staff.
Ms. Wizora, could you hear that?
Yes, I could.
Okay, Ms. Sisak, could you hear that?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Okay, this is Kara Van Bakker for staff. Now, staff doesn't have a strong position on these, other than we believe that the follow-up questions were simply follow-up questions. They weren't additional requests, and that the requested material is discoverable and should be produced.
All right. Are there any commissioner or advisor questions for staff? At this time, I think it would again be helpful for us to, first off, are there any other questions for any of the parties? Any? Ms. Weiss has some questions.
Thank you. It's Rolaine Weiss. I had maybe a couple for Mr. Weiss. Sorry. I was looking at the one where you talk about interrogatory 15, sharing costs, and I just can't see in there where you ask anything about sharing costs. But where do you think that is?
If you look under the subpart where it asks them to describe in detail how the interconnections would be designed and installed from a Swifttel perspective, we think that's an area where they would have identified how they would, when you design when you design an interconnection, generally part of that is how you're going to cost it out or who's going to be responsible for what on that, and we think that should have been clarified there.
I think it would again be helpful for the commission to hear any advice or guidance that Ms. Weiss might have for us. Ms. Weiss, if you want to provide us some recommendations.
Sure. I would recommend that with respect to request 2 and 3, I believe that motion to compel should be granted. I think Brookings is maybe reading this a little bit too narrowly and that they should be required to tell who is connecting directly and who is connecting indirectly. With respect to the question about they don't know how some traffic is delivered, I guess the whole point is to the extent they know it, they need to provide it, and to the extent somebody in their company knows it, then they need to provide it. But as Mr. Wieczorek, I think, stated, you don't have to go outside to other parties to provide that kind of information. But again, I would think it would be unusual if they don't know that. Interrogatory 15, I believe they did clarify that it is a two-way front. Again, I just don't see where the sharing cost question is in there. So with respect to interrogatory 15, I would not recommend that the commission grant that motion to compel. Interrogatory 19, I would agree with Mr. Wieczorek that I don't think they specifically answered his exact question. And I think that, and the question specified is whether they would agree. So I believe that motion to compel should be granted. With respect to interrogatory 26, I think that Swiftel should be compelled to answer that question also with respect to the indirect interconnection. And with respect to interrogatory 29, I believe that also should be granted, though I would agree with Swiftel that it should be limited to the original questions that were asked. And I'll as an example, I would say that reading Sprint's email with their follow-up questions, I'm not sure that the first question that they posed actually could be subsumed within the question originally asked in 29. So I would say that you would grant it to the extent that it's limited to the original questions asked. And with respect to the number 38, I would have to agree with Swiftel that all they were asked to do was to identify the facts they believe supported that statement, and I don't think we can compel them to identify more facts that they believe support the statement. So I would say no to that one.
Thanks very much, Ms. Wiest. You know, I have a question for you with regard to request 38. You know, when I read the request and then I look at the response, it doesn't seem as though the response is particularly addresses, you know, fully the request. Am I any guidance on where you think I might be wrong on that?
I understand your point. My only problem is that when Sprint asks for what additional information they want Swiftel to be compelled to identify the 1360 charges only for additional directories. And I guess my point is I can't say that, I don't know how we can say that that is what Swiftel was one of the facts that they need to identify to answer that question.
Any other commissioner questions for Ms. Wiest or other parties? If there aren't any, a motion would be in order. If anybody has one, they can certainly feel free. I can hop in unless somebody's got one ready to go. Motion has been made, and I would certainly concur. I think we'll just move on consensus that the issue should be bifurcated.
I concur.
Okay, let's go ahead and move forward on that then. Commissioner Hansen, do you have some motions, or do you just want us to move through the menu?
In TC06-176, I will move that the commission grant the motion to compel on items 2 and 3.
I would second the motion.
I'll concur.
Motion carries. Any further motions?
On the same docketed item, I move that the commission not compel item 15.
I would second the motion.
And I'll concur.
That motion is made and carries.
On item 19, I move that the commission compel.
I'll second.
I would concur. That motion carries.
On item 26, I move that the commission compel.
I'll second.
I will concur. That motion carries.
On item 29, I move that the commission compel with the condition that it be limited to original question asked.
I would second.
I'll concur.
That motion carries.
And item 20, excuse me, and item 38 is that the commission compel, with my belief that it needs to be answered more completely.
Is there a second?
No.
Hearing no second, the motion dies due to lack of a second. I was almost there, Commissioner Hansen. I just couldn't quite get there. I will move instead that for request 38, the motion to compel is denied.
I'll second that.
And I will oppose on the basis that I believe that the answer needs to be provided. The answer to the question needs to be more complete.
Wonderful. That I believe that resolves all outstanding issues on the Sprint motion to compel. I'll pause for a moment to see if anybody has other business that we've forgotten. Hearing none, we'll proceed to the second question with regard to this docket, and that deals with the motion by Swiftel to compel. And at this time, I believe it would be appropriate to hear the oral arguments by Swiftel.
Thank you. Mary Speckman on behalf of Swiftel.
Go ahead and proceed. Thanks, Mary.
The first comment that we raised in our motion to compel is our reading of South Dakota Law Section 15-6-33(a) requires that interrogatories be answered under oath, and although Sprint did provide a verification, it is not under oath, and we would request that they be required to provide, or that they be required to answer their interrogatories under oath. And then I will just discuss briefly each discovery request and production for document request that we raised. Our discovery request 4 asked Sprint to identify any contracts and billing agreements that it has entered into with any third-party customers. They objected to the question for a number of reasons, including trade secret, proprietary, highly sensitive information, also that it's vague and ambiguous, overly broad, unduly burdensome, and that it's not likely to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. Although Sprint has now responded to the question, they have not withdrawn their objection. And in light of the fact that discovery requests are continuing in nature, we would ask that their objection be denied. On discovery request 5, we believe that Sprint has now provided the information that we sought, and we will withdraw our motion on discovery request 5. On discovery requests 13, 14, and 15, in discovery request 13, we asked Sprint to list the retail telecommunication services that it intends to provide to end users of MCC or other telecommunications carriers or service providers, and to state the rate that you intend to assess for each service listed. Questions 14 and 15 are somewhat similar in nature. However, they ask for different information. Question 14 asks for a list of the wholesale telecommunications services that Sprint intends to provide and to state the rate for those services. And question 15 asks Sprint to list the wholesale telecommunications services that Sprint intends to provide to MCC and to state the rate that you intend to assess for each service listed. Sprint's response was basically they responded the same to each question, and they also raised objections. They objected to providing the rate on the ground that it requests Sprint to reveal the rates it charges to MCC. In question 13, clearly they are not asked to provide the rate they charge to MCC. They are asked to provide the rate they charge to end users of MCC. Further, they object to the information that it would not lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. And we believe this objection should be denied because Sprint itself raised the question of wholesale versus retail services in its petition for arbitration. And I think because they have raised the question or raised the issue that there is a distinction between wholesale and retail services, I think the question asking them to list which services that they provide are wholesale services and which are retail services is not only relevant, but is simply asking for clarification of their own argument in their petition for arbitration. Sprint also objects in question 14 it appears that they continue to maintain their objection on the grounds that it's competitive information. And they further object because Swiftel did not define the word retail, but as I have just explained, Sprint is the one that has raised the question of wholesale versus retail services in its petition, and I think that raising that question or trying to say that because we have not defined retail, somehow the question is vague. We are simply asking them to explain terms that they have introduced to this proceeding. On discovery request 18 and 20, in discovery request 18, we asked Sprint basically to identify information that they claim in their arbitration petition they will provide. So, for example, at page 18 of their arbitration petition, Sprint claims that it will provide industry call records that can be used for billing purposes. And Sprint also agrees to provide the necessary records for audit purposes to ensure accurate billing. And we asked Sprint to identify all the information that would be provided as part of the industry standard call records, and that would be provided as necessary records for audit purposes. In their response, it appears that Sprint does answer the question about identifying information that are going to be provided as part of industry standard call records, but they do not provide an answer to identifying the information that will be provided by Sprint as necessary records for audit purposes. And question 20 basically follows the same kind of format, where, again, it appears that they do not provide any information concerning the records that would be provided for audit purposes. Discovery requests 23, 24, 25, and 26 all relate to questions concerning the equipment that will be installed or required to be installed or used for delivery of services. And the purpose of these questions is to gather information concerning Sprint's representations in their petition that they will be providing certain services and MCC will be providing certain services, and their further representations that they will be somehow jointly providing services. They try to get to the heart of what is really happening here. We have asked a number of questions of Sprint to identify the equipment in question 23, the equipment that is installed or required to be installed to deliver services to MCC or MCC's end users. question 24, a list of the equipment and facilities in South Dakota which are owned, leased, or controlled by Sprint, which are available for use to deliver traffic exchanged under the agreement. Question 25, provide a list of all equipment and facilities in South Dakota which Sprint intends to use to deliver traffic exchanged under the agreement to MCC or to receive traffic exchanged under the agreement from MCC. And then question 26, provide a list of locations for the equipment and facilities identified in question 24 and 25. Sprint has objected to all of these requests as being burdensome and not relevant. And as I previously discussed, all of these requests are relevant to gather facts concerning statements presented by Sprint in its petition. In terms of their argument that it's burdensome, in their response to the motion to compel, Sprint provided a number of diagrams showing call flows, which seem to show a very limited number of facilities and equipment that are going to be used in the provision of service. So it is hard to understand how responding to our discovery request would, in fact, be burdensome. And then we also asked for a motion to compel on a number of our requests for document production. The first production for documents asks Sprint to produce all documents that were referenced in any interrogatory, identified in any interrogatory, relevant to any interrogatory, or that Sprint contends support its responses to interrogatories. In their original answers, Sprint objected to all of points A through D as being unduly broad, burdensome, vague, and would cause Sprint to incur undue expenses. In their response to the motion to compel, it appears that Sprint is abandoning its objection to A, 1A, B, and D, and that they only now maintain their objection to interrogatory response 1C. If that is, in fact, a correct interpretation of Sprint's response, then we would withdraw our objection, except that we believe that the contract between Sprint and MCC should be produced. And in the last argument, the commission compelled Sprint to produce that document to Interstate. For all of the same reasons, they should be compelled to produce it to Swiftel. We do not object to the redaction of confidential or highly sensitive trade secret information. However, as was suggested, we believe that once we see the redacted document, if there is a question as to whether or not Sprint has improperly redacted any information, we should have the opportunity to bring that back to the commission. Production of document request 3, we asked for a diagram of the facilities identified in question 24 and 25. Sprint has responded now that they do not have a diagram, but they also objected to the production of the diagram on the grounds it would be burdensome and not relevant. They have not explained how it would be burdensome, and so we believe that that objection should be denied, and also the fact their objection that it's not relevant, we believe that objection should be denied because the diagram will go towards basically substantiating or further examining Sprint's own representations about how it intends to provide service in this proceeding or as a result of this proceeding. production of documents 4 and 6. 4 asks for a copy of contracts and documents with MCC, and 6 provides for all agreements between Sprint, including its affiliates and MCC. And again, Sprint has indicated that they will provide that, that if they are required to provide that, it should only be as redacted, and the same discussion for production of document request 1 applies to this as well. Production of document request 5. Sprint, we asked Sprint to provide a fully populated call record sample for each and every call type that Sprint is proposing to transport over the multi-jurisdictional, multi-use trunk you are describing in this petition. In its original response, Sprint first said that it does not have call record samples at this time, but then Sprint further went on to say that they would be prohibited from providing such records if they existed. Sprint did not officially write this up as an objection. To the extent that Sprint is not objecting to the provision of populated call record samples, if and when they have them, then we would withdraw our motion on that point. But if Sprint is, in fact, objecting to providing them, even when they do have them, then we would ask the commission to deny that objection. This information is relevant, and as we indicated in our motion, any customer confidential information or carrier confidential information could be redacted to make sure there was no issue with confidentiality. And, excuse me, with production of document request 8, we asked Sprint to provide a diagram detailing how the Sprint MCC network will process call types, and Sprint has now provided at least some of that information, but they objected to this question on the grounds that it was not likely to lead to discovery of admissible evidence, and again, because discovery requests are continuing in nature, we would ask the commission to deny that objection that this information is not relevant. And that concludes my argument.
Ms. Sack, at this time I think we'll take commissioner or advisor questions. I do have one. It's regarding document request 13, 14, 15. I understand why you would want a list of the retail and wholesale services. Help me understand a little bit better why rate information would be necessary in this interconnection dispute.
Well, frankly, Commissioner, to the extent that a rate is not charged, that would be important to know because it would go to the question of whether or not a service is, in fact, being provided. I think part of the and conversely, if a rate is charged, that would go to support whether or not a service is provided and to whom. So, for example...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to just give an example. When Sprint says that it provides services, let me just get my answer here to 13. When they say that they provide telephone exchange service, otherwise known as local telephone service, to end users of MCC, it would be relevant to know whether they charge a rate for that to know whether, in fact, they do provide that service.
be get, I mean, couldn't you get at the same issue but without specific rates? I mean, rather just, couldn't the question have been asked just the way that you just posed it? You know, is there a legitimate and bona fide rate being offered for that service?
Well, not exactly the way you phrased it, because I suppose Sprint would come back and say yes, because MCC is going to charge a rate. And what we're trying to find out is what services is Sprint providing, and what rate are they, and for which they are getting a rate. So I suppose some variation of the question you just posed would be acceptable.
Well, and the reason I'm asking is that, I mean, I do think, you know, some weight should be given to Sprint's argument that rate information is, in a competitive environment, is not the kind of thing that one would want to give out unless there was very good reason. So I just want to try to figure out exactly what we need here for you all to get the information that you're entitled to as part of discovery. So thanks.
And Commissioner, to the extent that Sprint has made that argument, that only applies to any rate that they are assessing to MCC. That argument would not apply to any rate that they intend to assess to an end user, because after all, that information would be in their price list, which has to be made available to the public.
Commissioner, advisor questions for Swiftel. Hearing none, I think at this time we will move toward hearing the oral arguments by Sprint. Mr. Wazorek? Mr. Wazorek, are you with us?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right.
Are you prepared for your oral argument?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, proceed. Thanks.
First of all, I would apologize to the Commission on the sworn statement. Originally the statement I gave, I had actually used the identical one that ITC had sent to me, and that Ms. Sisak wanted it under an oath statement, and my client had provided that to me last Friday, and through an oversight, I hadn't forwarded that to Ms. Sisak. So that, as to the sworn oath, I will email that to her immediately, and that's my apology. There's no objection to providing it in the format she's asked for. My understanding is from her argument that as to document request 4 and 5, they've been withdrawn.
Discovery request 4 and 5?
Your data request, I believe, is how you label them. Discovery request 4 and 5 were withdrawn, not document request. Thank you for that clarification. So I'll go straight to 13, 14, 15, where I believe, Mr. Chairman, you ended up at. As to 13, where they've asked that we list the retail telecommunication services that you intend to intend to provide to end users of MCC or other telecommunications carriers or service providers, we provided a response listing the services that we are going to provide to those end users. That second part of her question was state the rate you intend to assess for each service listed. That we are jointly providing with MCC, and MCC will have the billing relationship with the end users for those services, and I believe that might clarify that issue. We provided what information we had. To the extent they're looking for rates or something that was within our contract with MCC, we have objected. And the Commission's already heard that argument, and would stand by the argument made earlier today that that confidential should not have to be produced. Under 14, where she requested that we list the wholesale telecommunications services that Sprint intended to provide to telecommunications or service providers, we objected to that as being very broad. It's not limited to South Dakota. It's not limited to this type of arrangement with cable companies. We've provided information that we have long distance in the state, arguably that request is that broad that would apply to all long distance services we're providing. To the extent that there's any wholesale type services provided to cable companies, all the services that we provide to cable companies are listed and set forth in our attachment to our original response to discovery, I believe, to the response to Swiftel is labeled as 1.1 and lists all the services that a cable company can acquire through Sprint. And would stand by that response to the extent that they would seek for seek additional information for outside the state of South Dakota or beyond this type of service that we're rendering in this situation. We believe it's not related to this situation. It's overly broad and not likely to lead to any admissible evidence in this case. And we have provided the actual the long-distance tariff in response to their motion to compel, and we've also cited them to the Quest and Prairie Wave agreements, interconnection agreements that were filed with South Dakota as other information that's going on in South Dakota. I think we've more than adequately answered that to the extent we've objected to the breadth and limited our response. I think it's appropriate. As to 15, while I stand by the objection, it's obvious that this commission's already ordered we provide a redacted copy of the agreement with MCC, and I believe it's going to list whatever services we're providing to MCC in the agreement. So that might, quite frankly, eliminate the issue as to 15. While I stand by that objection, the agreement would likely be the best place to see exactly what we're doing with MCC. Not that I'm stipulating to production of it, but I'm not going to argue a bunch about what
the told, Mr. Wisorek. Hold on. We lost you just a moment ago. We're going to ask you to back up.
Yeah, you kind of fade out there occasionally. So that might, quite frankly, eliminate the issue as to 15. I will stand by that objection. That was it.
From there, for the purposes of the record, I am not waiving my objection, but I'm not going to re-argue the issues on the discoverability of the agreement. And just for purpose of the record, I wanted to make that clear. Then going to discovery request 18 and...
Mr. Wisorek, this is Ms. Broad. I just want to make sure that we're clear on the record that we do oppose providing the rate as we stated before.
Right. Based on the redacted version.
Okay, we didn't hear the who asked the question. We don't have that for the record, and we would like to ask that the question be restated.
Statement by Ms. Barone be restated.
Yeah, the statement made by Ms. Barone or Ms.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. Ms. Barone, I just wanted to clarify that we stand on our objections with respect to the rate. I think that's what Mr. Wisorek said, but it's hard to hear sometimes, so I just wanted to make sure the record was clear. And I believe Mr. Wisorek had a follow-up on that with respect to the redacted version of the agreement.
Certainly, I just wanted to make clear, and I thank Ms. Barone for pointing out, is that I just don't want to rehash all these arguments as to rates within the agreement. I believe they're all confidential, and we're going to, and my assumption is the Commission doesn't want to hear arguments as to whether or not we should produce that, and we're going to get an order as to the redacted version, and but I don't want it deemed on the record that I've waived my objection. With that, I would go on. Her next motion to compel is under 18 and 20, which I believe she grouped together to a degree. We have, in responding to her, provided the information of exactly the information that we're going to populate in the cell. My understanding is that they're going to, well, what we represented, they're going to get the standard SF7 signaling field. They get the standard SF7 data. We have, in our agreement, have proposed that if there's an issue with their ability to measure traffic, that we would then use factors, and we would show them how we calculate our factors and give them a right to object how we calculated the factors. I believe that's more than sufficient in responding to the discovery that she has posed on behalf of 18 and 20. Obviously, as you roll out a service, there might be unforeseen circumstances. Spring is not somehow taking the position that we're going to play hide the ball on where the traffic's originating. We represent to this commission that Sprint's going to work to make sure that everybody knows how to appropriately track and bill this traffic. And we believe we provide enough information at this point on it. Going beyond that, beyond basically referencing would provide standard type of information that's recognized in the industry to establish those factors. I don't know how much further you go with that. I don't know what else you can compel at this point. Beyond what we've provided, so we believe that we have more than adequately responded to 18 and 20. The next discovery requests she had were 23 through 26 that dealt with equipment. I want to make it clear to this commission, as part of the original discovery, we provided a diagram setting forth how and generally what type of equipment we were going to use. When that equipment was on MCC, was MCC's equipment, and when that equipment was our equipment. We provided a general diagram that was not a South Dakota diagram. I'm not exactly sure why it would be necessary to have a specific diagram showing where all your equipment is in South Dakota. In addition, in the discovery, we've identified our point of presence, which exists in Sioux Falls. We've also identified the switch we'll be using. And I'm not sure where the requirement for anything else for equipment, I'm not sure why you'd need model numbers or anything like that beyond how you get the traffic to me and what, at the best case argument is what switch are you going to use to deliver that traffic to me, because the traffic, those switches might have idiosyncrasies that on the information or the field is delivered for some reason. But beyond that, I don't see a need to go out and try to figure out every model and make number of every piece of equipment that's being used. The final determination of whether there is a direct interconnect has not been made. That's going to be a question to this commission. And that's, of course, information we can't provide. We've provided them everything, where our point of presence is, everything on their side of the line, everything that's going to get the traffic to them. And I don't see what additional they would need or that would, number one, be necessary or even relevant and lead to any kind of admissible evidence in this proceeding. From that point, she goes to from the discovery request to the document request, and as her request for production one, I do have objections to that. We do stand by our objections, and she pointed out that she was unclear as to which you're objecting to. We did cite to 1C where she asked for any documents that were relevant to any interrogatory response. And I had actually add D to that where the request for any document that we might contend support our responses. Those are fairly broad. To the extent that we provided documents that support our responses, those were the diagram document and the table offering that Sprint undergoes. Those are relevant. Those have been provided for blanket demands for any potentially relevant document.
We believe that's just overly broad. The next one she hit on was production request number 3. That was the diagram of facilities that identified in question 24 and 25. I believe the diagrams we've given have been sufficient. We do not have a South Dakota diagram. We have a general diagram of how this facility works. We then actually supplemented it with a call flow diagram of that 66 pages. To the extent that the diagram of facilities is necessary, I believe that suffices. The next production question she had was 4 and 6, and those dealt with the contract, an addendum, and the agreement between MCC and Sprint. Again, I would stand by my arguments that I made in the ITC case, that those are not relevant, not likely to lead to admissible evidence, highly confidential and subject to trade secret, and should the commission order discovery of the MCC Sprint agreement, that we be allowed to redact it. And provide the redacted copy. I have no objections to, if the commission orders a redacted copy, to Ms. Sisak, if she believes something that might have was redacted that should not have been, I would propose that she should email the question of what she believes is, should have been should not have been redacted, email that point to me and copy staff, and then we could try to see if we could resolve that without the need for a hearing. And finally, well, not finally, excuse me, under request for production 5, she asked for a populated call record that deals with the multi-jurisdictional, multi-use trunk we've been describing. This is the multi-jurisdictional, multi-use trunk is being developed by Sprint in this market and other markets. We do not have populated call record sample at this point. I would represent to the commission that Sprint is very careful with the confidential information that might divulge information on end users, but I don't anticipate that Sprint would have any issue with providing commonly things in the industry or records in the industry used to make sure that they can read our SS7 data and see what kind of call data record we collect. Finally, number 8 is if we request a diagram detailing the network and how we're going to process calls. Again, we've given a general diagram, and we've given a 6-page example of how to a call flow diagram that deals with 6 different call variations as part of this discovery, and I believe that is sufficient. I would be open to any questions from commission at this point, you show the wish.
There are commissioner and advisor questions for Sprint. Well, I do have one regarding discovery requests 18 and 20. You know, Mr. Wazorek, it appears as though Sprint provided a number of the fields, but the discovery request also asked for what records would be provided as necessary for audit purposes. Do you think the response fully addressed that question?
Um, 18 and 20, you said, Mr. Commissioner? You know, well, we've identified that how they can capture the SS7 information that's generally used, and actually to render the bill, and I believe Sprint, we've also agreed that we can use billing factors provided, and we'll provide those on paper if we come up with those. I believe the proposed agreement states that if they don't like our billing factors, there's a procedure to follow under that circumstances. So I believe it is sufficient at this point, the information that we've provided for them to establish and do any type of audit that would be necessary. I would say, Commissioner, we're not, if after we start providing service, Swiftel would approach Sprint because they're having problems reading it and need additional information for audit, I do not perceive Sprint having an issue with that. One of the problems we have in this is our negotiations did not get very far, so we're not exactly sure Sprint needs some kind of special provisioning of information to do audits that would not different from the industry standards. So I think we've said we'll provide industry standard information. If there's something specific beyond that they need, I think all they'd have to do is tell us.
Just trying to make sure that the discovery requests are responded to as fully as possible, and so I'm just trying to make sure that everything's squared away on that front. Other questions by commissioners or advisors for Mr. Wazora? We have one by Commissioner Kolbeck.
I guess this is Commissioner Kolbeck. Some of the AMR is not... The AMR records are not available at this time, or SS7 fields populated. Do you have any idea when they will be?
The multi-jurisdictional multi-use trunks are just coming into use at Sprint.
Mr. Wazorek, we're going to ask you to start your answer over. I think we lost a few of your words at the beginning.
Commissioner Kolbeck, my understanding is that the information is not readily available at Sprint this time because the multi-jurisdictional, multi-use trunks are just rolling out, and they're just established. Sprint is just establishing them. So, if you go through our response to the motion to compel, you'll see that we give a lot of fields that we say we know we will populate. And then there are additional fields that generally you would not, but if in process and that those fields need to be populated so the call and the point of origins can be properly mapped and traffic properly discerned for billing purposes, you know, point of origin, whether it's access, whether it's subject to recip comp, we will populate those additional fields. Why I believe some of those fields have not, the final determination has not yet been made on all the which fields be populated.
Mr. Wojcik, this is Monica Brown. If I could add a couple of comments here. First, what Sprint is attempting to do, first of all, is to win the right to be able to send this traffic over these interconnection trunks, and that's one of the issues in this proceeding. First, we have to win the right to do it. And then once we win the right, then we work on the development side. You don't start developing until you actually win the right. And so in South Dakota, if and when we win the right, we would start development at that point. And one thing I would just clarify is that the information, this is how we responded to the question. The information, we told what we would populate in terms of mandatory fields. We told what we would populate with respect to optional fields, and we identified those fields that we thought would be, or we believe, are applicable to billing. So what we did, we just provided everything we will fill when we can, when we do have the right, and then Swiftel takes that information, and if they have the ability to track that information, then they're going to be able to bill off of those particular records or that particular information because that information is inherent in the signaling in SS7. If, however, Swiftel is unable to do that because they have some constraints on their side and they're unable to bill us, then Sprint is willing to develop factors. Then, at that point, if there is a question regarding our factors or how we came up with this information or the interstate or access versus recip comp traffic, then we will give them the right to audit our factors, audit our numbers so that they can assure themselves that we're not sending or trying to arbitrage, because that's not Sprint's intention. Our intention is to provide all that information so they want, number one, they can bill on their own, because if I recall correctly, there was a discovery request that asked whether we would bill off actual records. If they have that ability to do that, then we're done. If they can't, then they have to get with us in order to determine what other information they may need. We don't know. We don't know what their limitations are, if any.
Commissioners, this is Mary Sisak. May I respond to a couple of the comments made? Hello?
Yes.
First, it's my understanding that has already won the right to do its universal trunk proposal in Iowa. And if they are not currently transporting traffic under that agreement, then I think Sprint could at least answer the question as to when they are going to be transporting traffic under that agreement. But to but I think the question that the commissioners asked was whether or not the call records or a sample call record might be available. And I think the fact that Sprint is doing this arrangement or doing this same type of arrangement in Iowa might provide the answer to that question. The second point that I'd like to make is I think the question was asked of Mr. Wieczorek as to whether or not the information Sprint provided addresses the question about what records they would provide for audit purposes. And I'm not quite sure what Mr. Wieczorek said, but what I am sure of is nowhere in their answer that they are now going to support under oath do they say that the information they provided answers that part of the question as well. So at a minimum, it would appear that they need to supplement their answer.
Are there other commissioner questions or advisor questions for Mr. Wieczorek? If not, then we will turn to staff for any comments or recommendations they would have at this time.
This is Kara Van Bakkeren for staff.
Excuse me, I don't hear anything.
All right, let's give it another shot.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? This is Kara Van Bakkeren for staff. Can you?
All right, we're going to do, take Ms. Van Bakkeren at a different microphone.
Right here. This is Kara Van Bakkeren for staff. I assume you can hear me now as I'm right over the microphone. I'll start with 13, 14, and 15. And staff takes the position that as far as services, that information should be disclosed is discoverable. However, rate information don't see as relevant and pertinent to this proceeding. 18 and 20... from the arguments that have taken place, it sounds as if all information currently available has been produced, that being industry standard type information. So it appears as if Sprint has responded as completely as possible at this time. 23 through 26, regardless of whether or not Sprint sees that information as being useful, staff takes the position that it is discoverable and therefore compelling discovery is appropriate. Production of documents, number one, all relevant documents to the responses should